where we stopped last hour, and verse 18. I hope by Thanksgiving that we'll have a booklet out on Proverbs. What I've tried to do is to take the portraits we've done and do a thorough job of giving a portrait of the, I did the portrait of the sluggard first. I did that for subjective reasons. So having written the portrait of the sluggard, every time I start to write on Proverbs again, I read about him, and it makes me write another portrait. And so we're about, I think we completed this week number 12 portrait, and I think we're going to come out with probably 22, maybe two dozen portraits throughout Proverbs that I hope will help you to read the book under the idea of some of these characters that cross the pages throughout that. And I think perhaps by Thanksgiving we'll have that completed, and if not, for sure by Christmas. Looking now at the portrait of a man of quick temper, and we stop with Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 18, which read, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife. And we emphasized here that this is literally the man of heat stirs up strife. And we're going to do some study this morning about what is involved with the word strife. But we did conclude with Proverbs chapter 15, verse 18, when it says, a man of heat has kind of locked this person into a caricature. This is what he's like. And therefore, since we do have a certain kind of person, and again, as we said today, we're using man in the generic sense, man in the sense of humanity, including men and women both, this person has enough characteristic of temper that you can simply say, that's a man of heat. He has a hot head. He has a quick temper. And therefore, we emphasize that many quarrels, if not most or all quarrels, depend more on the kind of people that are involved than they do on the subject matter. Now, put that away in your mind and think about it the next time, or perhaps you can reflect back on this week, on a quarrel that you've had, or a temper problem that you've had, and look purely at the subject matter. How really important was the subject matter, or what was it that triggered the temper, and wasn't it really more you and them, or you and the other people that were involved, than it was really a great matter of debate that involved really serious subject matters. I would venture to say that almost every fight within the context of the home does not revolve about deep subject matter. It revolves about the two people that are involved that just clash with one another. And therefore, we put the statement that quarrels depend more on people than on subject matters. And verse 18 begins by sort of locking in this person and saying, this is a man of heat, and he stirs up strife. Now, notice the opposite kind of person. The opposite kind is the slow to anger. And the slow to anger is simply a person in whose presence quarrels just die a natural death. Have you ever met the kind of person that it seems like they're just of a disposition you couldn't fight with them if you tried? You couldn't quarrel. They're the kind of person that tend to pacify. Now notice in the latter part of verse 18, one thing about the grammar. It says the slow to anger pacifies contention. And let me comment on that word pacifies, because there are three things to say about it that are important. First of all, as you know, one thing about this word. In Hebrew, and again, when I give you these things, I'm only giving it because I hope it'll help you to understand the word. Hebrew doesn't have tense. In English, we think of past tense, of present tense, and future tense. They don't have tense. They have stems. And their stems are kal, pael, and the causative, or hifil. Little something about the language of the Old Testament will help you to know. You have a kal, pael, hifil stem. And they use the kal when all you want to do is make a statement. All you want to do is say something. You don't want to emphasize it. All you want to do is, do you get the fact? So statement of fact. That would be just, I ate. Statement of fact. You don't care about anything else except getting across the fact that you ate. If, however, you did something more than eat, I mean you really ate, you would have a PAL stem, which is intensive. In translation, you might do it something like this. For the cal stem, you would simply say, we ate. For the intensive PAL stem, you would translate that same thing, and I think it's on the tip of some of your tongues. We got it. Pigged out. That's right. That would be a nice PAL stem in Hebrew for the word akal, which means to eat. We pigged out. Akal would be eat. Ikal would be we pigged out. And then they have another little thing they like to work with is if you cause something to happen. And the hifil is the causative. Emphasizes cause. And that would be, I made you eat. I caused you to eat. Would be the idea. Now, I say all of that only to point out that in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 18, the word pacifies is a causative stem. And it talks about the fact that he causes something to come about. He makes it happen. So the slow of angry causes contention to stop. He throws a wet blanket on it. Or we put it simply this way. Strife literally dies in his presence. And so notice you have a different kind of person. This kind of person is the person whose disposition is to be slow to anger. All right? Our next passage on the quick temper is Proverbs 16:32. And we're going to do two passages here. 16:32 and 25:8. 25:28. And the reason for putting two passages side by side is to note that in the first one, you have a person who does not have control of his temper. And in the second, we will have a person who does have control of his temper. And so we'll want to look at the two of them side by side. Chapter 16 and verse 32. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And so line number one is going to say, self-control is better than physical strength. Self-control or inner control is better than physical strength. Self-control is better than physical strength. It is better to be healthy in the terms of controlling our temper than it is to be free from disease. And the word mighty. Or can we put it this way? This verse is talking about mind over muscle. It is better to have the right mental attitude, to think right, to be in control mentally and emotionally than it is physically. So verse 32. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He that has the mental control is better than he who has the physical control. And he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. The first line, or the second line here on rules his spirit. Something about the word rules. And I'm going to give a translation with that, then I'll explain to you why. With the word rules, we're going to give, with this single word, he who has fierce control. Now, I'll justify that translation for you. He who has fierce control. I mean, this word has got lots of strength in it. So verse 32, he who has fierce, avid control over his spirit is greater than he who captures a city. Now again, let me give you a little grammar on three things about the word rules. First of all, its position. If you were looking at a Hebrew Bible, the word rules is an emphatic position because it's first. In other words, he really wants us to focus on that. In other words, the position of the word would be equivalent in English to an underline or an underscore. So if we read it properly, he who rules his spirit, its position is emphatic in the sentence. The second thing to say about the word is its grammar. The grammar of the word is it is a participle. And participles have a special use in Hebrew. They are used for continuous action. Participles emphasize continuous action. an all of the time sort of thing. It's a thing that is forever happening. And third, something about its stem that we just talked about. What would you guess, by the way, if he takes that word rules and underscores it, if he takes that word not only and underscores it, but says this rulership must go on all of the time, what stem would you guess it would be? Cal? Statement of fact? Is that all he's trying to do? PAL? Trying to put some zip in it? That is what it is. It is a PAL. And that means it is intensive. Now, why have I translated this way? Well, because of the stem, intensive, I put he has fierce control. He has fierce, continuous control. So the emphasis then in verse 32, the latter part, he who has fierce, continuous control of his spirit is greater than he who captures a city. And if you might put it this way, the man that can control his temper, put him side by side with a five-star general who's just had an enormous victory. And you know who's the greatest? The man that's got control of his inner spirit and the man who can control his temper. A great, great proverb. Now let's look at the other side of the coin. This is a man who does have control. Now let's go to 25:28 to a man who doesn't. 25:28. This has given us the greatness of a man who is in control. And now let's look at a man who is not in control. 25:28. It says, like a city that is broken and without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. So that we have then the man of no control type person. It's the no control person. And the no control person is pictured here in a metaphorical sense as a city without walls. A city without walls means what? A city without walls is a city without defense. It has no protection whatsoever. Now, that's hard for us to think this way simply because Kansas City doesn't have a wall around it. But when you look back at ancient cities, one of the absolutely vital things, if you were not to be taken over by marauding hordes of people, is you had to have walls and you had to have a city gate. And consequently, the walls would be thick, the walls would be tall, and they would have few openings in it. We've had many, many times words in Proverbs about the city gate, and that was simply the great opening where the business of the city took place. When it was shut at night, you were effectively shut out. You didn't get into the city. And consequently, I guess our parallel would be Kansas City, Missouri, what would it be with no law enforcement people on the street at all? Now, maybe you're a naive person and say, oh, it would be fine. No, it would not be fine. I'm sure within hours of the fact that there were no law enforcement people on the street, if this were the case, frankly, I would cancel class right now, would lay down the microphone, get in my car, and I would speed toward my house. Because you know something about what is out there and that without that, and this is what he's talking about. A city without walls is a city without any protection from the outward attack whatsoever. And notice what he says about that. Like a city that is broken into without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. What is he saying? If we are not in control of ourselves, we are vulnerable to attack. So without self-control, we are vulnerable to attack. Or can we put it another way? No walls inside equals no walls outside. And the picture is, a person who does not have control over himself is nothing but a victim. All right, now let's move to... Oh, I thought that was a cat. Proverbs 19:11. B-E. No, no insult intended if that was your baby. I love cats. And I love babies that cry like cats. Okay, in 1911, a man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. And the first word to focus on is a man's discretion. We need to understand what is involved in that word. What does he mean by a man's discretion? The word discretion is a word that we had in the book of Psalms. Let's go to it. Psalm 32. Psalm 32. And I'll point to the word for discretion here in the psalm. And you may recall when we covered Psalm 32, we mentioned it. Look beyond, clear up to your heading. It says Psalm 32. Blessedness of forgiveness and trust in God. Do you have that in yours? That's not part of the Hebrew text. Now, here's where the Hebrew text begins. A psalm of David, and then notice it says a maskil. And if you've got a footnote, it says possibly contemplative or didactic, a skillful psalm. The word maskil is a participle form of this word discretion. And when we went to the maskil psalms, we noted that there's a whole grouping of psalms that are called didactic or doctrinal psalms, and they go under the word maskil. The word maskil means to have insight, or shakel, to have insight. And we noted that a maskil psalm is a psalm that has insight and therefore gives insight. And you have a whole grouping of psalms over which David has put the word maskil. And it is simply a different form of the word for discretion. And so taking that back then to Proverbs 19:11, it says, a man's insight, a man who has intelligence, a man who thinks, a man's intelligence. Now, what is it going to do for him? Well, a man who has insight, that insight will make him slow to anger. And so notice the emphasis is he is acting from emotion or mentality. Notice this man is a man who has learned to act on his mind, not his emotions. He has learned action by thought. He has learned action by thought as over against action by emotion. And basically, what is temper? Is temper an emotion, or is temper a carefully thought out thing? Temper is not a thing that is thought out. The very fact that it's quick means you didn't think first. And therefore, in this verse, you have the man who has achieved something. He has achieved insight. Where do we get insight? Well, God's Word gives us insight, and this is a man who has steeped himself in the truth of God's Word, and this has made him into a man that is slow to anger. Now, does this verse have anything of hope in it? Was this man in verse 11 always a man slow to anger? Was he just born that way? No, notice, becoming slow to anger is something that he becomes. So here is a man, I take it, like all of us, who has a hot temper, but he's learned something. And he has gotten insight, and that insight has filtered through, and it's begun to affect his emotions, so that he has now become a person who is slow to anger. Second, by the way, what determines where our actions come from? We have volition, don't we? Volition is capacity to choose. This man has learned, through his insight, to make a choice in matters, and his choice is to be slow to anger. And furthermore, his glory is to overlook a transgression. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean this man has learned to be passive towards sin? That makes sense? That through good insight, I've learned to be passive towards sin and evil. That's not the point. What is the transgression here? I take it the transgression here is when somebody wrongs him. What is likely to make our temper quicker than anything else? Isn't it personal wrong? You know, someone does something toward us personally and our temper is quick. And this man, because he's got insight, when he is transgressed against, he's learned to do what? He's learned to overlook it. And he's therefore a person that is slow to anger. That's very, very difficult. But he not only has learned to overlook it, but he loves it. You know, he is wronged, and he says, I literally find my glory in not seeing it, in overlooking it. That's a great ability, and that's great insight that this man has developed. All right, Proverbs 19, same chapter, and verse 19. 19:19. Now notice, we've got here a cause and effect verse. We started today with cause and effect, and this is one of them. It says, a man of great anger shall bear the penalty. Now notice, simply saying, anger and penalty is a cause and effect matter. God's made it that way. That's the way it is. Anger and penalty is a cause effect. One of the ways that God rules his universe is by means of not every time something happens interposing himself. He's just built in a system whereby if you do this, this is going to have its penalty. And he simply says, if you are going to be a person of great anger, you must accept the fact that there is penalty with that. And you will look back at many times when your anger carried you away and you paid a penalty and it's there, it's a matter of fact, and this is what he's stressing in this particular Proverbs 19:19. So, a man of great anger shall bear the penalty. And then notice, for if you rescue him, you will only have to do it again. A man who is not in control is forever finding what? Fresh trouble. And therefore, those that try to rescue him have got a full-time job. So let's put, he is forever in new trouble. Why is he forever in new trouble? Why? His disposition. He's a hothead. And because you're a hothead, you are forever going to be getting in a new squabble. And therefore, to rescue him from his many, many troubles he'll get in is full-time work. And so the picture is this man who is by disposition a hot-headed person, and this is describing in this verse not an occasional outburst. This is the way he is. He just gets hot at everything, and you get hot at everything, and there's plenty of trouble to get in, and if you're always getting in trouble and you try to rescue that person, you're forever saying, I haven't heard from him for 2 days, and I'm expecting the phone to ring any minute, and it does, and he is in new trouble because if he's hot-headed, you rescue him from his trouble, and you only wait for another day or so, and he's going to be back in the same pot again. And that's the emphasis of verse 19. It doesn't say, don't rescue him. It does say, I think probably with a little bit of smile, that you see that guy over there? You're going to try and rescue this hothead? Lots of luck. You won't have to anything else to do in life because you'll be repeating it over and over again. All right, next, Proverbs 22:24. And 25. Proverbs 22, 24, and 25. Let me say that with Proverbs 22, we're going to have a shift in emphasis because so far, when we've talked about the man of quick temper, all we have had is, you know, what he is in himself, his own character, and the things he brings upon himself. Now the emphasis is going to shift. And we're going to be looking at how should we relate to a person of quick temper? See the shift? It's away from his character now to how do you handle this kind of person. Verse 24. Do not associate with a man given to anger. And that, and looking at verse 24, introduced me to another topic in Proverbs, which we will pursue, is I ask myself the question, this passage is very clear, that here is a kind of person that we ought to avoid, a kind of person that should not be associated with. And then I further ask, I wonder if there are a group of people in Proverbs that we should not associate with. And I decided to put that on the back burner. I did discover some, but we will be doing in the coming Sundays a little study on the kind of people that we ought to avoid association with. And one of the major reasons that we ought to avoid association with is going to be interesting. The chief reason is not, I am nice person and I don't associate with bad people, or I am righteous and you are unrighteous. It's not the idea of that at all. It's not the idea of being better than they are. It's the idea that certain kinds of dispositions are contagious and you can't get vaccinated for it. And therefore, he's going to say, you shouldn't associate, because what they got is something that can be caught. It's really strange that we don't associate with a person who has a physically communicable disease. We don't want it. And therefore, we don't associate with that person because we don't want the physical disease if it is contagious. It's strange we don't do that on the psychological and spiritual level, isn't it? And this verse is going to teach something very interesting, that there is certain, and we might ask, is a hot temper innate? I mean, is that just Irish people or Germans? You know, we think of Germans are stubborn, and Dutch, and they are. They're Irish are hot-headed, and again, those labels are not, you can have a very docile Irish person. You can have a very forgiving and very open German person, and we don't want to label that way, but those things nonetheless are around. Is it, and therefore, is a hot temper innate? I mean, you were just born quick-tempered. Or is temper learned? Is there anything learned about temper? Can you learn to be angry by being around angry people? Is that possible? Well, look at verse 25. 24 and 25. Verse 24, reading it again. Do not associate with a man given to anger. O go with a hot-tempered man, lest you, what's that word? Learn his ways. Now, this is simply indicating that there's something about a hot temper that can be learned. You learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. So notice the disassociation with him is not a self-righteous matter. It's a matter of protection of your own character. And I think we can expand that even further, is that we ought to carefully pick associates, because do people affect us? People have an effect on our lives, and therefore we ought to pick for friends the people that will affect us in a good way, not people that will affect us in a bad way. And that is simply part of the idea of Proverbs, which will be choosing associates that will have good influence on us. And we might add one thing at that point for parents. Remember, as parents, there is a point in life when you have the liberty to pick associates. Thought about that? There's also a period in life when you don't get that privilege anymore. And what does that say? Doesn't that say that we ought to begin very, very early of picking associates, good ones, good influences for our children? Now, don't take that to an extreme, because our children need to bump up against all kinds of people and learn that they are responsible for making the right choices in regard to their reactions. And it doesn't mean to isolate them and say, you may only go with friends who meet the following criteria, and I've only found two. And one of them is doubtful, and so in the interest of that, you may only have one friend. That is not right. But at the same time, we're talking about the fact that associates do affect us. And this is what is being emphasized here. And this was very interesting to me, because I never thought of... I've always excused temper on being something. That's just me. Don't you do that? That's you. And you happen to be surrounded by nasty circumstances, and if it weren't for the circumstances and for what you innately are, you would always be kind, loving, and patient. But this is simply saying, be sure you're around the kind of people that give the right kind of influence. A very, very important proverb along that line. All right, one last one. No, next to last one. Proverbs 29:11. 29:11.
I hope we're distinguishing our own minds and not coming off with the idea that anger is an illegitimate thing, as we said in our last session. Many times in the Old Testament, you have the anger of God. And there are certain things, like we said, if we love righteousness, we hate unrighteousness. And there ought to be anger there. But we're talking about the person who has no control of it. Anger is to be controlled. We have this in the New Testament where it says, be angry, but don't sin. And then the last phrase interprets it, don't let the sun go down on your wrath. And what is that saying? It's saying, when you don't let the sun go down on it, it's saying you're in control of it. So the emphasis is that legitimate anger is controlled anger. It is the capacity to get very, very angry, but you're not out of control to the extent that you do something stupid. Temper is anger out of control, and we're looking at anger out of control in these passages. Okay, chapter 29 and verse 11. It says, a fool always loses his temper. And so this is pointing to a person who has absolutely no restraint at all. Anytime the impulse comes along, he loses his temper. And by way of contrast, a wise man holds it back. The word for wise here is our key word in Proverbs, chokmah, skill for living. The man who has skill for living holds it back. Now, do you see something interesting about this wise man here? A fool loses his temper, but a wise man has no temper. Right? Ah, this is really refreshing. A wise man, who has a temper in verse 11? Who has one now? The fool or the wise man? And what's the answer? Both of them got a temper. But there is a difference. And what's the difference? The difference is control. The wise man holds it back. And may we ask this wise man, or the man that has skill for living and holds it back, how does he get that way? He's just born wise, right? No, he isn't born wise. It's not innate. It comes with skill, with discipline, with practice, and with training. He learns how to hold it back. Now, that ought to, again, take us back to parenting once again. One of the primary responsibilities of a parent is teach the youngster how to rule himself, how to control himself. Or we might put it this way, temper tantrums are serious. Who do you think had temper tantrums uncontrolled in his youth? The man in the first part of the verse or the man in the second part of the verse? I would say the man in the first part of the book that always loses his temper always did. He lost it when he was a little kid. Mom and dad did nothing about it. They didn't take time to say, you've got to get in control of your life. You've got to control the temper. And so very, very important here is we may have temper, but we must learn to control it. We all have it, but must learn to control it. Proverbs 29:22. It's our last one on temper. 29:22. Pretty major subject, is it not, in Proverbs? It says, an angry man stirs up strife. And the first thing we ought to say about that is that the words angry man describe his general disposition, not a temporary state. This is a general disposition as over against a temporary state. As a matter of fact, throughout the book of Proverbs, one of the characteristics of the book all the way through is it does describe people in terms of general disposition. Proverbs doesn't come down so hard on acts that are wrong. It comes down hard on dispositions that are wrong. It doesn't come down hard on the person who sins. It's a person whose general disposition is wrong. It doesn't so much condemn an act, though that is there. The emphasis is, what are you in the big picture? What are you generally? And in this 22nd verse, he's talking about a person that can fairly be described as an angry man. And that is not looking at one act. It's not saying you've got angry here and here and here. And those three things total up to make you an angry man. No. It's talking about a person he's always boiling on the inside. An angry man stirs up strife. And a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. Now, what is that saying? It is saying anger obscures our moral sensitivity. Anger obscures moral sensitivity. When you're, have you ever, just analyze that for just a moment. You get angry, and isn't it easy to do something sinful when you're mad than when you're not? Because when you're mad, doing the wrong thing doesn't look as bad. It looks what? It looks completely justified. And therefore we might say anger is that which justifies doing the wrong thing. Temper tends to justify it. Again, I had every right to smoke those three people going on the, passing them on the shoulder. I had every right to at the time because I was wrong and I was hot and I was mad. And I didn't want to hear anything about the any other aspect, even the safety aspect. Temper obscures lots. It obscures safety, obscures all things. Everything goes out of focus when we are dealing with anger. Okay, that then completes us through the man of quick temper, for which I'm very grateful to be through, and be able to move on to someone else besides myself. And look at the man of strife. But I do hope you people out there with hot tempers did get my message. And let's go back to Proverbs 17. I want to introduce the word. It says the beginning of strife. And let's talk, first of all, about the word strife itself. What does it mean? We want to focus in our minds some synonyms for the Hebrew word. First of all, a little bit of statistics. The word strife, madon, occurs 19 times in Old Testament, and it occurs 15 in Proverbs. So this is a major subject here. If you want the word, it is madhon, M-O-D-H-O-N, madhon. And again, for people that are studying Hebrew this afternoon, looks like that, madhon. The beginning of strife, and we're going to be looking at that word in its some 15 occurrences. We will not complete it this hour, but it's some 15 occurrences. We'll do it more tonight. 15 occurrences in Proverbs is focusing on the idea of strife. Now, what do we mean by the word madom? Let's give a group of synonyms for the word strife. And let's put it in terms of it's the kind of person who is apt to do these things, apt to cause, and I'll list four things for you, cause an argument. So put in your mind the word argumentative. Number two, madom, madon is the kind of person who is likely to cause a conflict. Number three, and I think I'll probably be using this more than any other, it's the kind of person who is apt to cause a quarrel. And one more synonym, it is a person who is likely to cause a dispute. Can I put it another way? It's the kind of person who will take even facts and he will turn them into fuel. You ever met that kind of person? Who will take a fact, and they will run with that fact, or those little facts, and they will use it as fuel for a dispute, or fuel for a quarrel. And therefore, it's a kind of person that gets a hold of information, and any information they get hold of, give them time, and they will make a fight out of it. They're an expert at creating this type of thing. Or we could put it another way, looking at it not from the standpoint of cause, but the word disagreeable many times covers the idea of the word, a disagreeable person. Okay, we got enough now to see the general idea. It's a person who is, and this is their disposition now. Their disposition is they will go around and collect facts, link them together illogically, and come to a conclusion that makes a fight. It's the kind of person who will look at you and they will see they slipped up over here. And they don't know why you slipped up, but you slipped up. And you slipped up over here and over here. And then they will take those things and in an insane way link them together and they will have a case against you. And this is the type of person that's being talked about in here, the person that loves to, it's a nitpicking kind of person too, that nitpicks all of these things together and then pretty soon has a dispute or a quarrel with you. This is all under the word madhon. So let's begin, and we've got time enough to do it, to talk about the first passage that deals with what is the nature of strife. What is the nature of strife? And this comes out of the verse we're looking at, Proverbs 17 and verse 4. The nature of strife is arrived at by a simile. Strife is like. Proverbs 17, 14. And what is our simile? It says, the beginning of strife is like letting out of water. Now, there it is. The simile is, it is like letting out of water. And the question is, what does that mean? It's going to be a basic metaphor, a basic simile, to tell us something about what strife or a disagreeable person or what a quarrel is like. The simile is basically this. Strife, picture a reservoir or a dam. Let's picture a dam. And as you look at the dam, is a little trickle of water coming down. Now, what is going to happen with that trickle of water? Well, that trickle of water is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon the whole dam is going to come down, and you're going to have a torrent of water. He says, there it is. That's what strife is. It starts out with a little annoyance, a little trickle, and all of a sudden, it will become, over a period of time, it will become like the eruption of a dam. So, what's he saying? A person who creates little disputes, you know, little things here and there, love to light a fire here, light a fire there, pretty soon is going to be the author of an enormous torrent of trouble. And therefore, I have titled, or going to title, the strife, nature, is it is something that goes from trickle to torrent. That's the idea, trickle to torrent. It's like letting out a little water. A trickle becomes a torrent. Now, what is involved in that torrent of water? I would take it, we could have several things in the metaphor. It lets out more water than it is possible to predict. It lets out more water than it is possible to predict. Second, it lets more water out than it is possible to control. And third, it lets out more water than it is possible to retrieve. And that is a beautiful metaphor expressing how a little quarrel begins. Here's the little trickle in the dam. If the whole thing comes out, can you predict how far this will go? That's a quarrel. You never can predict how far a quarrel will go. Have you ever had a quarrel or had someone had a quarrel with you and it was relatively minor, wasn't a big deal, and you look back on that thing and you had no idea it would ever get that big? And that's what he's saying. That is what strife is like. It starts little and you can't predict where it will go. And have you ever had a quarrel and the dam began to come down and you try to stick your finger back in the hole? And suddenly it takes all fingers to go in the hole and pretty soon your whole body can't do it and you can't control what happened. And you go back and you say, I'd like to straighten it out. Proverbs is going to point out that strife, once it gets loose, and you lose a friend over, you can never retrieve them. It's impossible. It's going to be like, the metaphor will be, it's going to be like the bars on a walled city over a brother or friend. And then after it's all over, you try and pick up the pieces and put it back together and be friends again. And what happens? How do you pick up water? You can't pick it up. It's too late. And therefore, we have in 1714 the tremendous danger that is involved. The Talmud makes a comment on this, and the comment of the Talmud is your Jewish commentary and traditions by the rabbis, and it has a remark that is much like Proverbs 17. It says, strife is like the aperture of a leakage. As the aperture widens, so the stream of water increases. And that's exactly what he's getting at in Proverbs 17 and verse 14. The beginning of strife is like letting out of water. Now, if that is the case, then what ought we to do? And boy, the words are beautiful, aren't they? I don't even need to comment on them. So what should we do? Latter part of verse 14, abandon the quarrel before it breaks out. Refuse to engage in it is the emphasis that are there. Now, we want to begin to deal with the next part, and I'm not going to get into it till tonight, but let me, before I caption it for our outline this evening, let me say that I have absolutely nothing, even remotely whatsoever, to do with the authoring of the content of the book of Proverbs. I did not write it. Are you listening to me? I did not write it. Whatever is here is only what we can observe. And therefore, the following observations, and before I am stoned, I will say this and head for the door. Of the 15 passages in Proverbs that are going to talk about quarrelsomeness, about, well, all of our words, about being argumentative, of the 15 passages, five of them, one-third, fully one-third, deal with oh, this is fun. Deal with the contentious wife. And again, I did not create that fact. It was created by the Holy Spirit. And you do have access to the author. God has graciously granted us as believers the privilege of access to God through Jesus Christ. It's called prayer. And you may consult the author and say, why did you take fully one-third of the strife passages in the Old Testament and dedicate them to the contentious wife in the book of Proverbs? You may get an answer to that from heaven. I don't know, but nonetheless, they're there. So please come back this evening. It's very colorful. He's going to say, you've got a contentious wife. It would be so much better to live in the attic than to live with the contentious wife. So tonight, and I'll put down our title, which will be Trickles to Torrents in the Living Room. Trickles to Torrents in the Living Room. Or the Contentious Wife. And we will start with number one, Proverbs 21 and verse 9. Now, in closing, the passage we've dealt with today are telling the believer how to... No. Do the other 10 deal with it? I was going to bring this class to a serious conclusion. The rest of them deal with everybody. Okay, sorry. We've been dealing with passages that are directed toward the believer in terms of control of his life, and I think it's very fitting that we conclude with the fact that perhaps you've come this morning and you say, well, I'm going to try to get in control of my life. Well, it doesn't really work that way. It doesn't work until we have an orientation toward God through Jesus Christ, and therefore it's very important to enunciate the gospel. Is that we all have a very, very basic problem, and that's we're alienated from God. We're born dead in sins and trespasses. And because of that, and because God is just, He can issue nothing toward us but His own righteous judgment. And there is, however, in the New Testament what is called G-O-S-P-E-L. It's a word that means good news. And that good news is so simple. It simply means that Jesus Christ has taken the penalty that was on us on himself. And we're called upon to believe that. And when we believe that, we become his children. Galatians says we are all the sons of God by faith in Jesus Christ. Romans deals with the fact that we're justified by faith, and a man is not justified by works, but by faith in Jesus Christ. And much of Proverbs is addressing sons. Are you a son? You only become a son by faith in Jesus Christ. And therefore, we would invite you, if you've never made that step, to put your faith in him as we close with prayer this morning, to get in the family and become one of the sons and begin to develop in the Christian life as per the book of Proverbs that we're studying. Father, we're thankful today for your truth and for your word. We pray that we will study it seriously. May we never, never in the book of Proverbs point fingers. May we not say that message on the hot temper was so good for someone else. May we recognize that we are all sinners by nature. And that which applies to one of us applies to all of us. And may we recognize that as you portrait for us in the book of Proverbs various characters, that we're always in this condition, not by fate, but by our own fault. And that if we are fools, we're fools because we choose to be, not because we have to be. And we're thankful for all these characters. You offer hope. And the very reason for the critical analysis of your word is not to down us, but to give us hope and to help us recognize if we have a hot temper, we can become wise people. And if we cause strife, we don't have to continue to cause strife. We can change. And we give you thanks for this great hope in your word, in Christ's name. Amen.